Welcome back to another episode of Untalented Podcast. Whoop, whoop. Today we are joined by Will Poskett, who is an award-winning strategist and an overall wise guy.
Knows a thing or two about the industry, I'd say.
Yeah. Big expectations, a lot of pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. So yeah, should we get started with a little icebreaker?
Yeah, so we're going to do a this or that. You may probably have heard of this or that before. Don't think too much about it, just a little quick one too. So yeah, let's go.
Okay, skill or fame?
Whoa. Well, that's a good one to start with. I always bang on about fame, but I think skill's more important.
Okay.
Too hot or too cold?
I much prefer cold over hot.
Early start or late finish?
Early start all the way. I love to get up at like 4:30 and like get most of the work done.
Oh my God,
I'm an
serious?
Early bird. No, it's because I'm an insomniac, basically.
Oh, okay.
It's not healthy.
It's not a good thing.
I take back that comment.
I'm not encouraging it to anyone.
Books or films?
I'm dyslexic, so films, yeah. More visual.
Too hot or too cold?
I'll still say too
he
cold.
Said that one. He's still too hot.
I know. I think.
Are you trying to force your too hot gender?
We'll go. Dogs or cats?
Great question. I used to be cats, but the older I get, I value loyalty over selfishness. So dogs increasingly. So yeah.
Love that.
Okay. Sorry to all the dogs out there. City or countryside?
Torn. It changes every 6 months, to be honest.
Okay.
Nike or Adidas?
Nike, definitely.
Sandals or Crocs?
They're both cringe in my opinion, but I'll go for Crocs.
More trendy.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Playlists or podcasts?
Podcasts.
McDonald's or Burger King?
McDonald's.
Nice.
80s or 90s?
80s, 100%.
Yogas or CrossFit?
I'm quite lazy, so that's a difficult one. I'll go for yoga. It's less strenuous, I guess.
True. My personal favourite, Taylor Swift or Britney Spears?
Swiftie, definitely.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift.
Wow. I thought you were going to go Britney.
No.
Okay, cool. So we want to start off by just, you know, talking about yourself. You know, who are you? And we always ask the same initial question first. Who was the first person to make you feel talented?
Do you want to? Should we go beyond advertising? That might be more interesting.
Yeah, it's always interesting.
Can you
do
both?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or both.
So beyond advertising, I'm actually dyslexic. So for many years at school, I was, you know, quite far down the class and struggled a bit. And a lot of my teachers said, "Oh, you're quite bright, but you're just lazy." And then actually, my science teacher, he was like, "No, actually, you're really good at like science and this kind of like more lateral sort of thinking." And he just really instilled a belief in me that if I got my head down and worked hard and, you know, and just really committed to stuff, I could achieve good stuff. And I think that was the beginning of a turnaround for me, where I went from a bit of a class clown to, you know, not doing very well at school to, yeah, doing quite well and going on to university and stuff. So big up Mr. Noble, the physics teacher.
Always a teacher, isn't it? I think everyone has a teacher that really impacts you when you're younger.
And you always remember them.
And they'll pop up in your head and you're like, thanks for that.
Yeah, Mrs. Dean. She was mine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, loved her. Aww. Absolutely loved her. Nice. And who's made you feel, I guess, most talented, like, in recent years? Do you have more of, like, an advertising-specific figure that has really, yeah, kind of, I guess, distilled, yeah, faith?
I think, yeah, I mean, well, I'm going to be controversial already, actually, I think.
We love controversy.
But I think one of the biggest problems in our industry is a lack of nurturing or a lack of training.
Yeah.
Especially, I can't speak for the other, you know, creative or account management. Within strategy, it's often like jump in the deep end, learn as you go. And everyone's so busy that they often rarely have the time to kind of train you up properly. But there's one person, so my former boss, Raquel, who's now, she's been like, she was the head of strategy at Saatchi's, she was a BBH AMV, and now, she, you know, she's a CSO, amazing woman. But, you know, she really, you know, I think I was like 4 years into the industry at that point, and I was kind of like faking it till I made it. And then she kind of like, you know, took me apart and rebuilt me as like a proper strategist. Mm. And I think most things I know today are because of that woman. So she's really good.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. Shout out to Raquel.
Yeah.
I think that's, I mean, it's the same with us. Like when I first started working, you know, alongside the industry having to just absorb everything, and there's no book to tell you, you know, or an accessible book to tell you this is what this is, this is what this means. You have to really learn as you go. And yeah. I always find that's something that I can imagine strategy being quite difficult. Especially
with strategy, you are the book, right?
Yeah.
Like you are just the kind of brain.
Mm. Well, I think the more you get into it, you realise there is no right or wrong answer. Yeah. So there can never be a book, but it would just be nice to have a few points along the way, I think.
Yeah. Exactly.
At the beginning of that career.
Some touch points. And that kind of leads me on to the next question. Like, what on earth is strategy?
Try to find it, I dare you.
We're going to start with a small question.
Yeah.
It's a good question. The truth is, there's no right or wrong answer. Mm. I think over the years, what I've come to view it as, well, I think, look, the strategy beyond an agency, which I know that a lot of your listeners will be from an agency background, and that broader strategy, in my opinion, is it's about basically trying to define the best possible path forward for a business. Now, unpacking that a bit, what does that mean? So I think, firstly, it's a game of probability. If you ever get a strategist on this podcast, and like, it's about dead certainty, they're definitely a fake guru, because it's a probability game, it's an odds game. Mm. And it's also about, you know, you can't predict the future, it's about stacking the odds in your favor. So I think that's generally what strategy is about. But I think within an agency, you know, it can take many shapes and forms. So there's something called like brand strategy, which is basically helping define like a brand's point of view on the world. Or there's more kind of creative strategy, which can be like creative briefs, you know, the briefs that lead to ads. Or there's kind of comm strategy as well, which is kind of like media planning and stuff like that. So yeah, there's no right or wrong answer, I think. But generally, strategy is about, more broadly, it's about finding the best possible path forward. Mm. And then if we focus on agencies, sure, there are all these different types of strategy. But really, it's about two things. It's about making the work better. And really, it's about selling great work as well. Like, the enemy of great work is not the lack of ideas. I'm sure you've talked to many great creatives on this podcast, and they have a drawer full of amazing ideas, right? Mm. The issue is like them not getting bought by slightly nervous clients. Yeah. And I think strategy has a big role in playing there in trying to do that persuasion job, I think. So
definitely. And what was it for you about strategy? Did you wake up one day and you were like, right, that's it, I'm going to be a strategist? Or what was it that made you feel like it was perfect?
No, I totally, I think like a lot of strategists, I fell into it. Because strategy is like one of the most interesting but least advertised jobs in the world, I think. Mm-hmm. Like you'll never know about it unless you go looking for it. And So I went to uni, blah, blah, blah. And then before I went into advertising, I actually tried and failed to be an actor.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I went to drama school in London, but I realised I was going to be a waiter for the next 40 years. So
what drama school did you go to?
Central St. Martin's Drama Centre.
Oh, yeah.
So I did that for like a year, dropped out, and then I got an internship. And then I got on a grad scheme. And on that grad scheme, they were like, well, you are literally one of the worst account people we've ever met. But you might be a planner. Try that. I'm like, what's planning? All right. So I gave planning and strategy.
What's planning? It's such a common question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I still ask that question. What's planning?
Yeah. I just feel like it depends on the culture of the agency, right? There's so many same thing, different culture agency.
Okay. So you've had a very successful career and have worked at some of the biggest advertising agencies in the world, like Droga5, Wieden & Kennedy's and Saatchi's. What point did you realise like, oh, I'm actually really good at this?
I don't think I've quite reached that point yet. I don't know. I think one thing I will say about those agencies is I was incredibly lucky to work with some of the smartest people I've ever worked with.
Oh, yeah.
and I think like anything in life, you're only as good as like your peers. Like, you know, we're all a bit competitive, aren't we? So you benchmark. Mm. So especially at Droga5, I think Droga5 had probably some of the best strategists I've ever worked with, and it really increases your game. Yeah. And I think, you know, I never met David Droga, but there was this quote they always used to say, which is like, clients come for the creativity, but they stay for the strategy. And I think, you know, from the outside, Droga might seem like a very brilliant creative agency, but it's just as strategic as it is creative. So I was very lucky to work at those agencies. And I think, you know, it's funny you say, oh, you know, when did I know I've made it? I don't think I have. Do know I've made it. And I think if anything, it shows you how much you need to know, how much you've got to go and what you've got to learn. I think the day I ever think that I've made it or I know everything about strategy, seriously, just put me out to pasture, because I'm I'm old and grumpy and maybe a bit because like you should always be trying to learn and grow and grow and learn.
It's true. And what, like, you know, it's subjective, isn't it? At what point is like, I've made it?
Yeah. And I think strategy and creative in general, but strategy specifically, where it relies so much on culture and human understanding, that is constantly changing. And the, you know, the involvement of like Gen Z as well are now coming into the industry. And I wanted to actually ask you about that. Like, I think there's a lot of, you know, big dogs at the top who are, you know, older, been around the block a little
I'm
bit.
I'm only 40.
I mean, I'm talking about above you.
Oh, okay. The people that have made it. Yeah,
yeah, the people. Yeah. The people who yeah, yeah. I wonder, like, what value do you see in having more, like, Gen Z or Gen Zers and Zillennials, as they're calling them now?
And how do you approach that from, like, a strategic perspective?
That's a good question, yeah. I mean, for me, I'm going to cheat and not directly answer your question, but I think it's less about just Gen Z.
Right.
And I think it's about diversity of background and thought in general.
Yeah.
So, you know, if really what we do in our industry in advertising is, you know, we build brands and try and make them relevant in culture or make them appealing or have a, you know, have a point of view that like resonates with people in the world, right? And that's going to be kind of impossible if the people doing the thinking are all old rich guys that, white guys that live in Hampstead, right? So I think I think beyond Gen Z, it's about people of all backgrounds, colors, age. You know, if I ever worked in a big agency again and I had my own strategy department, I would love to have like someone in their 60s, someone who's like didn't go to university, someone from like a foreign country. Like that, I think would be like a really powerful asset to have, because I think the biggest issue in strategy now is that, and I'm probably not going to get cancelled, is probably that most strategy departments look like me, you know, like white, university educated, middle class. And I think it's limiting. It's really limiting.
How do we, I completely agree with you, and I absolutely back this idea that, you know, different perspectives bring like better work and more creativity for, I guess, younger, more diverse talent wanting to get into strategy. Like, how can you imagine a world where that's so much more of a fluid system?
Yeah, it's not easy.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be an overnight thing. I think, you know, you've got to start hiring more diversely today. And I think also, you know, going back to my previous point, you've got to like make people aware of strategy in the first place. Mm-hmm. Like, I think if I'd known about strategy when I was like 18, 19, I definitely would have been more active in pursuing it, but it was very well hidden. So I got a scholarship to a grammar school, right? So we had a pretty good careers department, but I imagine some inner city kids, for example, might not have access to that sort of like awareness of jobs or careers. So I think you've got to be more proactive in going out to the world and finding these people. I think there's a real issue. Another big issue is about like being able to afford to do it. I mean, I've been in London 15 years now, and it was quite expensive then on a low salary, but now it's insane. So I think it's ridiculous that you've got to have family in London or you've got to be in London to start a career in this industry. You know, I do think like we should be more remote first, and like that will help address a bit of the problem as well.
Yeah, and I think like it's positive to see you have like Brixton Finishing School and a lot of organizations doing some interesting stuff. And I can't remember which, I think it was VCCP, they have a kind of sub agency out in Stoke or something to basically attract kind of talent from there, which I think is definitely a really positive thing.
But there is a big London problem. London is a bit of a bee in my bonnet, to be honest. So I'm originally from Blackpool.
Nice.
And it's not that nice.
I've been to Blackpool.
Did you go back?
No.
Yeah.
It's good for ballroom dancing, apparently.
I went on the Pepsi Max ride.
Oh, yeah.
It was so dangerous.
What, like, a throwback.
Literally, like, it was made out of, like, chopsticks. And it's just this really high roller coaster. And you go in, you're getting on it, and there's, like, a risk of death. It's scary. And there's me, like...
It's terrifying.
Yeah, Blackpool, interesting pivot to move to London. That must have been a bit of a...
Well, I think, I don't know, are you guys originally both from London or...?
I'm an Essex girl.
Surrey.
So you're both from the south, basically, right?
Yeah, home county.
County girls. Yeah.
The truth is, like, post-1980... Well, I've got a bit of a history boring. Tell you got a strategist on, but...
Yeah, but we love it.
I just watched a whole four-part documentary about the miners' strike. That's a story for another time. But post-Thatcher, basically, all the UK economy went service-based, and it's all in London, pretty much. So I the only choice I had was to move down here to do the career that I wanted after university. There's a few, you know, it's getting better in Manchester now, but nowhere near to the extent of what London has. So, you know, I think to go back to your question, I think, you know, we need to make it less centralised as well. And I love that idea that VCCP are doing. We should do more of that. I'd love to see a little Blackpool Defiant one day.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting what you say about how... you didn't know planning existed or strategy was a thing that you could do. And I've had so many conversations where people have said the same thing. Mm. And a lot of people in strategy come from like history backgrounds, journalism backgrounds, science-y, psychology, behavioral sciences. And is that something that is just born from, you know, writing a thesis on something and then you think, oh, you can actually apply this to branding and stuff like that. And I think if I had someone who came into my university when I was studying journalism and, you know, my preferred thing was writing on like, you know, human culture and, you know, that kind of conversational piece. I'm like, if someone had come in and said, Meg, you can do this as a career and it doesn't have to be about writing articles, it can be about guiding brands. I would have been like, damn, hell yeah, I'll jump on that.
Definitely.
I'd love to do that.
And that would fill the void of the, like, there is definitely an issue with a lack of like young talent, generally, strategy. And that would totally fill the void because you're learning about it from a younger age and you're like, okay, yeah, this sounds sick, I'm going
to
do it.
And you'd have somewhere to start as well. And I think people struggle with not having somewhere to start. Like, how the hell do I do this? Who do I talk to first? Do I have to do an internship? Do I have to start doing things at my own time? It's, you know, and it is an accessibility thing as well. And yeah, I just think there needs to be more in the industry that's built around the purpose of getting young people to become a strategist or work with these big brands and give them the direction they need to be inclusive.
So. And what it means, what is the creative industry just generally as a whole? Like, I didn't really know what it was.
Same.
We used to, the creative industry used to have the creative department used to have a really good thing called D&AD, Night School, I think it was called, or something.
Yeah.
Well, you used to get, you could either be like in the industry as a suit or as a strategist, and say you wanted to be a creative, you could do this evening course where if you won the course and you were judged by proper CDs, you could basically get a creative placement. It'd be amazing if strategy had something like that.
Definitely. Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah.
I've got friends who won D&AD stuff and like New Blood. I think that's
the one,
it.
And
that has put them in now, you know, one of my closest friends is like just got a job at Lucky Generals and like
nice, great agency.
Incredible. And she really got that, and she's from Cornwall, and she got thrown into that. Shout out to Maria. she got thrown into that, and she moved to London, but like she had to do that to really start working at like the big dog agencies. But thankfully that was an example of, you know, someone coming in because of something like D&AD.
But you could do that with strategy as well. You could set them a brief 100%. And then who's got the best response or who's got the best 100%. Raw talent.
Like, I'd love to see more of that. But but what I wanted to ask you about as well was, besides, you know, the big agencies that you've worked at, you've now founded Defiant, which is your own agency. How did that come about?
Yeah, I think it was, I think two things. So I'm from a family of entrepreneurs.
Nice.
But
helpful.
Yeah, very helpful.
But before you get big, you know, it's not Mark Zuckerberg. It's like Northern.
I'd be concerned if it was.
Like, I wouldn't be working, frankly, if it was Mark Zuckerberg. But it's like Northern shopkeepers, you know, sort of own pubs and stuff. So small scale business.
Oh, nice.
But they always had that thing in me, which is, you know, I had a good run at those big agencies, but I always wanted to do my own thing. Mm. And I could see 40 straight ahead of me turning 40. I'm like, it's now or never sort of time. So that's a personal reason. But I think professionally, I just think the industry is broken, like fundamentally in the way it operates, is broken in so many ways. So, you know, what the reason we exist is to build what we call defiant brands. So the truth is, like, most people don't care about brands. You know, you've got busy lives. You're worried about finding a new flat, as you were saying before, you know, and you're worried about when you're going to do your radio show again about ghost stories. You know, you've got bigger things going on in your life. So only a few brands ever cut through, right? And that's why we exist, to kind of create them. But I think the way you create them can be done in a far better way. Mm. So now, traditionally, what happens is a client will go to a big agency. It will take 6 to 8 months to create something. They'll probably slap a big retainer on you. Mm. Also, you'll meet the big senior talent at the beginning, and then you're left with juniors for the rest of the process. And also, there's a lack of diverse talent as well. You know, it's all very London-based.
Yeah.
So what we do is we're project-based. So we plug in and out for strategy and creative. We're also, you always deal with senior people. So there's me and two other co-founders, both like, you know, my new business partner, he's basically ex-MD of MNC Saatchi South Africa. Mm. And then also diverse talent. So basically we've got an amazing community of top strategists and creatives from across Europe and now South Africa as well. And some of them, I shouldn't say this, work full time in some famous agencies, but they work with us on the side as well because they want to work on interesting projects with kind of challenger brands and scale-ups as well. So,
and with the brands that you are working with, as a strategist, obviously impact is really important to you. What impact do you hope to have like on the brands that you work with?
Yeah, I think like I think twofold. I think firstly, get into that, you know, create what we call a defined brand. So as I said, the truth is most advertising or communications is not even bad.
Mm.
It's just even bland. So just creating brands or communications that will get noticed.
Yeah.
Getting that 5%. And also, and this is all the any strategists listening are going to hate this, but I want to say it anyway. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know, this idea of brand purpose has been kind of cancelled at the moment.
Mm.
Basically because there's been a lot of really bad examples, like the Pepsi Kendall Jenner, when they basically said a Pepsi will like put an end to kind of like the race wars in America.
Pepsi will fix all the problems.
Yeah, for all the problems. So no wonder there is cynicism towards it. However, I do believe when done right, like brands can play a net positive role in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That brands like Dove, for example, and Real Beauty. And I'd love to, you know, we've worked with brands such as Zoe Nutrition, which is it's kind of a scale-up that does like health and wellness. And I love to work with brands like that. So we're not only creating like powerful creative work, but we're creating brands that are actually going to make the world a net positive and better place as well. So, but in a non-Pepsi,
Max kind of way,
purpose washing sort of way.
Nice. Yeah. You mentioned the Dove campaign there. Are there any other like really exciting, big strategic campaigns, maybe culturally relevant ones, which you'd love to do?
Like work I like.
Yeah. Yeah. Work you really like.
Yeah. I think the brands that I love the most, and it's a brand I'd love to get my hands on, but they don't need any help because they're killing it, is Liquid Death.
Oh my God, yeah.
Yeah. So if you think about it, you know, they're doing good in the world because they're reducing plastic waste, mm-hmm. they're taking on the BS. Can I swear on the podcast?
Yeah.
They're calling out the bullshit in the woke category. But they do it, they don't have to do it in like a serious, worthy way. Like it's just hilarious and funny what they do. So I think Liquid Death over the last 3-4 years have for me, the brand at the moment, I think they're amazing.
It's interesting. Quite a lot of people say that. And I think even the creative element of it, for those who aren't familiar, Liquid Death is a water brand which comes in cans and they look like energy drinks. They look like...
That's deliberate as well.
Yeah, it's very deliberately like playing on that over-branded...
Well, the whole strategy is they're trying to steal from energy drinks.
Right.
And get... Because, you know, with the Gen Z and stuff, the more sober curious, drink less alcohol. So they're deliberately... looking and feeling like an alcohol brand so they can switch people away from bad drinks, essentially. So it's all deliberate. It's brilliant.
It's so deliberate. It's really interesting. And they do a lot of interesting and fun brand activations around it. And it feels like it's also, you look at it and you think this is like an activation for a whiskey brand or, you know, it's very social. Everyone's come together and, you know, there's people taking pictures and interesting, like, that they've used the image of the Grim Reaper and the death kind of, like Liquid Death, like it's even the name feels really I don't know, like it's quite elusive, isn't it? But yeah, it's really interesting. I think that's a good point to make, and I think creatively there's a lot to be done with that. Do you think some brands are scared of doing things differently and, you know, being very like flipping the coin to have the adverse effect? Do you know what I mean? Like
the two scared to like, kind of do things differently.
So. Yeah. Do you think they're scared?
Take risks.
Yeah.
Yeah, taking risks. That's what I was trying to say in a convoluted way.
Yeah, yeah. Big time. Mm. I think a lot, if I'm really honest, I think most brands are.
Mm.
Now, in the beginning of my career, I used to get frustrated about it. It's like, come on, client, like do this crazy idea. Da, da, da. But I get it. The older you get, you realize that, you know, the client has got, you know, you think about it. Most clients that work on a brand, the advertising and communications is like 5% of their day.
Yeah.
And also, like they've got kids to feed, mortgage to pay. Like they're scared of losing their job or annoying their manager. So I get kind of the lack of appetite for risk. But I think the irony is like, actually the weirdly the bravest thing you can do is like think that you can copy everyone else and get a different result.
Yeah.
Like it's actually braver to like play it safe because it's like super risky in a way. So yeah.
No, for sure. Do you have a? I mean. I know you mentioned the stuff with Liquid Death. Liquid Death was interesting for you in terms of how they've gone about it. But is there a brand out there that you look at and you think, I'd love to get my hands on that and really change the way they're doing things?
And maybe not big brands. I think there's so much more that can be done with maybe smaller, more challenger brands, you know, from that whole impact piece.
Yeah.
From a strategy perspective, which brands are you like, wow, I'd love to...
Yeah, I mean... Can I give two?
Of course you can.
You can give as many as you like.
Well, it might be a long episode.
Not too many. We've got 5 minutes left.
You've got a little bit.
We've got another guest on there. I think one that's quite close to my heart is because like, I remember going there as a kid and my mum used to love it as Body Shop.
Yes.
So making a lot of redundancies.
Yeah, well, they're looking like they're going to go into administration.
And, oh, really?
Yeah. So basically, do you know the story of Body Shop, how it founded?
I don't know if I do, you know.
So basically, Anita Roddick, I think in the 70s or 80s, I'm not very good with dates and stuff, but essentially they were radical for the time, mm-hmm. you know, cruelty-free, good for the planet ingredients, whereas the whole beauty category was incredibly toxic on many levels. You know, and they had an incredible run, incredible growth, incredible brand, all driven by like a really powerful brand purpose to make the world a bit more beautiful or what, something along those lines. And then they basically, unfortunately, they sold to L'Oreal and it all went wrong, essentially. Mm-hmm. They started stocking bad products. They lost kind of sight of their vision and who they are as a company. And I think, because as I said, it's a brand close to my heart, but I think it's a brand that would, again, had a net positive on the world. Mm. And they had really clear sort of vision on what they were doing. And it'd be great to try and, just get in there and, you know, and revive that brand that was once an icon.
They did quite a lot of charitable stuff as well. It was a lot of like, giving back to the places that had, like, you know, they sourced their ingredients from as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there's a lot to be done with products and brands that sell, you know, things that come outside of what we experience every day. And I think bringing that into the brand story as well, it all comes back to the brand story. And when a brand has a story and it's prevalent throughout the whole thing,
I think that's
what makes brands feel more human. Mm-hmm. But what are some, on the other side of that coin, what are some brands that you think have missed the mark with their strategy for whatever reason?
I think the Body Shop has missed its strategy in some ways. Yeah. So the whole point of, in my opinion, you know, a brand strategy isn't just ads. Mm. It should be conveyed in everything the brand does as a behavior. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason they failed is because they started stocking like bad products. They stopped doing the thing you mentioned, which is like fair trade agreements and stuff like that. So they got their strategy wrong because they didn't apply it properly. So, but from an actual strategy point of view, this is where I should have done my homework a bit more.
It's fine. I mean, we can give you time to think about it if easier.
Because I think there's just so many out there. Mm. You know, when you can ask about it.
We can come back to it.
We can come back to it if you want.
I actually had a question thinking about, I guess, your experience in various different agencies and the creative team kind of structure and dynamic.
Yeah.
There can always be a little bit of conflict sometimes between strategists and creatives. Have you experienced that? Do you think it's changing? And what kind of, I guess, structure and model allows for true creative collaboration and strategy?
That's a great question. I think it depends. I think the best sort of relationship is when strategy and creative are very close together.
Yeah.
So the best relationships I've had is when I write in that creative brief, often it will be with a discussion. You know, I think back to Droga5, there was a great team called Dan and Charlene. I think they're at the Or now. And, you know, I remember working on pitches with them and, you know, we'd write the brief or the strategy together as opposed to me going away, figuring it out and then sliding it under the door. And I think throughout my career, the best relationships with creatives have been like that. Because I do think, you know, the best strategists are a little bit creative.
Definitely.
And the best creatives are a little bit strategic. So
we always say this, don't we?
Well, you have to be, you're creatively concepting, aren't you? And you have to be able to have that mindset. Yeah. And also from a creative, I think it's really important that they have a strategic mindset too.
Yeah. Mm. No, I totally agree.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the best, hopefully I'd like to think a lot of the best creatives would think that as well. So I think at Widens and Droga, that was definitely the case, like very, you know, very collaborative, strategy and creative almost bled into one. Mm. Where it hasn't worked, I'm not going to name names, where it hasn't worked is where they feel like very separate departments. Mm. And in my opinion, you know, who am I to say, but in my opinion, but the worst kind of strategy is some like overly intellectual strategist that hides in their office or at their desk for weeks on end, ivory tower syndrome, uses big flowery language that doesn't mean anything. And then the creatives are like, what does that mean? I think, as I mentioned before, the best strategy should inspire great work, but sell great work.
And
the only way you do that is be in the trenches with the creatives.
Mm. Absolutely, absolutely. And to feel each other's pain and to understand each other's frustrations as well.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think
that's a lot of pain.
definitely. Yeah. I think it's also interesting too, because typically the bigger the agencies, again, not naming, but it seems to be that's where it feels a lot more separate between the two agencies. Do you think that there is a world that a big agency can still have that real sense of like true creative collaboration?
No, and that's why I set up my business.
In short,
no, anything, you know, anything is impossible. Yeah. Anything is possible. You know, I look at agencies like Uncommon are amazing. And they're quite big now, right? What are they, 150, 100, 120?
Yeah. Now they've just been bought out by Havas.
So, yeah. So we'll see how that works out. Yeah. But I think even to get to 150 and have that phenomenal creative collaboration shows that it is
I mean, that only possible. Recently happened last year. And like they're still, you know,
killing it.
And so much work in the people and the culture and the hub of the agency. So
I think it is possible. But I think it is, to your question, I think it's a lot easier with a smaller, nimbler team. So, for example, when we get a brief, you know, the first thing we do is the strategy and the creatives. We plug in the right team and we work together trying to crack it, you know.
Yeah.
Super fast, super nimble and collaborative.
Yeah.
What do you think about the agencies that are, whether it be because they're smaller or they haven't quite established a strategy team yet, what do you think about, you know, like founders and MDs and creatives taking control of the strategy rather than investing and bringing in a strategist? Like, what do you think about the work that comes from that?
So, do you know, it's a great question, because there's actually been guests on your podcast that have got a founding team that are kind of management and creative. There's no strategist. The truth is you can obviously do it without a strategist. However, what I would say is that if you look at the best agencies in recent time, Uncommon, Droga5, Widening Kennedy, maybe not Widening Kennedy, they didn't have one, but they're older. So Uncommon, Droga5, BBH, they've all had like that planning suit and creative founding team.
Yeah.
And I think while strategy is not a necessity, I do think it can kind of like 10x your creative output and also consistently improve your creative output. I think it's good for new business as well. I think strategy is a bit of a secret weapon when it comes to new biz as well. I think of course I'm going to say that, but in my opinion, but
it's true. And I think a lot of agencies still don't really understand or realize the importance of strategy because in the last, 30 years, it's a relatively new discipline.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I still think there's a little bit of,
Or they've had a bad experience of strategy.
Yeah.
So it's funny, sometimes I've gone in as a freelancer before I set up Defiant, for example, and just the way they're almost like traumatized by their previous strategy experience. Like, oh, we got this guy in and he was just like so over intellectual.
Yeah.
And it was a pain in the butt. And I'm like, that's not what strategy's about.
Yeah, rather than it being about the guy, it's strategy. We don't need it. It's useless. Yeah. The greatest can do it.
And I think there's also, it's interesting to see, I mean, we had a conversation the other day, really, me and you, and you spoke about how agencies aren't selling strategy properly.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really interesting point. Like, what do you think agencies could do to
sell it better?
Just sell it better and value it more.
Yeah, I think that's a great... Yeah, thank you for reminding me of that, actually. I think it's a great question because I think one of the biggest mistakes that agencies have made in the last sort of like... You're right, strategy is only 30-odd years old. Is too often they give that strategy away for free in a pitch. So in a pitch, most of your listeners will know, you do strategic provocations or you try and nail the positioning and then you have some early creative thought starters. I think that's crazy. Like, I've got friends outside of the industry who work for management consultants and I've seen what they do, like strategically wise. Mm. It's not much different from, they have more data, but it's like not much more different from what we do. And it's not like, we could definitely compete with that. And let's just put it this way, Accenture's making a lot more money than most agencies right now. So there should be a way where we could sell strategy as, you know, as more of a product in of itself. And I actually think strategy, of course I'm going to say this because I'm a strategist, but I think strategy now is the real value add. Sure, 70s, 80s, TV ads, clever print ads are important. But in a world that is constantly changing, you know, cultural shifts all the time, having a really clear and powerful strategy that gives you your brand a point of view in the world can 10x your commercial value. So there has to be a way to package it up better. It's just not easy to, because it's not easy to do. Clients have got away with it for so long for either getting it for free in a pitch. And the problem is some agency will give it away for free in a pitch. So it's a race to the bottom.
Yeah.
So that's one issue. Another issue is that, you know, I have seen people try and set up pure strategic agencies, but a lot of clients aren't ready to receive that. They go, yeah, well, this strategy is great, but where's the creative output? Mm-hmm. So on the one hand, it's about trying to get out of this race to the bottom. And on the other hand, it's like, how do we detach strategy and creative a bit more and go a bit more upstream? She's not, I don't know, if anyone figures that out, they can be a rich person, I think. But yeah.
We spoke a little bit about kind of, I guess, agencies of the future and how we'd be a bit more diverse. Unknown run a workshop called Nobody Wants to Work For You, where we basically get a bunch of industry leaders, creatives, strategists, producers together and almost like design the agency of the future. In kind of your experience, if there was one thing that you could kind of click and change from the industry, what would that be?
That's a good question. You know, it's something I thought a lot about as I've built my own company. And initially it was a small thing, but the more I think about it, I think it's a big thing. Which is presentism, the need to be in a physical space to do work. Now, you will have people on this podcast and you'll talk to people in the industry and go, oh, well, we are a creative industry. We need to be in the same room to be creative. I'm like, that is bullshit. Okay. And I think you could be just as creative remote with the right systems in place and you can still be very collaborative. And why do I think that kind of remote first or lack of presentism is so important? Because I think if you allow for a more remote first, work from anywhere, geography's not an issue, approach to creativity, that will unlock diversity on a greater level.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's a good point.
You know, a lot of women, once they have a kid, are kind of like sidelined out of the industry because they can't do childcare and do the job. Mm. That would solve that, you know, be more flexible. The point I made before, we get more people from Blackpool, whether you like it or not, working in the industry because they can't, you know, they don't have to live in London. So I think agency of the future for me, and it's what the fine is, yes, we do meetings in Soho, but we're mostly remote first. And we've worked with brands from America to Europe to, you know, to the UK, obviously. But our talent is around the world and it's the best way to work.
And even from a, because I agree with you, but I also think the social interaction element is so important to build that trust from a creative to a strategist to an account person.
Yep.
How do you substitute that in real life, flesh, in the flesh, social interaction? How would that be, I guess?
Well, I think you can still do it, but I think it's the way that you do it.
Yeah.
So at the moment, like a lot of big agencies are doing, as you know, they're doing like a, I think it's a 3-2 model.
Yeah.
Well, they'll work from home Monday and Friday in the office, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I just don't think you need that amount of in the office interaction.
Yeah.
What we do is more like, bear with me, the analogy does make sense in a second. It's more like an airport lounge.
Okay.
So basically we will meet up once a month in our co-working space in Soho and we'll work all day together at a desk and then we'll go out for a beer or whatever afterwards. And that's all you need.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And then I think, and whilst that is fun, you know, the net benefit of tapping into more talent across the country, different backgrounds, is way more important than having beers every Thursday in London. Like.
Yeah, it's true.
And I'll be really controversial. You can edit this out, Dory, but most of the people that say that you need to be in an office are the old white guys that have a house 2-minute walk from that office.
So true.
I'm bought in London 30, 40 years ago. So.
Yeah. I think it does come down to the...
I'm definitely cancelled now.
No, yeah. I don't think you are. I think people agree with you.
We'll keep it in then.
I think it's the it's about being inclusive and having an accessible place for people to get to. Like you said, not everyone can be in London 3 days a week. And it's really expensive here.
Just to get here.
It's just like, and it's like it takes the average, you know, wherever you are, it takes minimum 45 minutes for anyone to get anywhere in London.
Yeah.
It's a pickle to get around. But I think, you know, like you said, it is still quite polarizing. Some agencies really just like people to be in the room and then bounce off each other naturally and have the energy there. But equally, that could be done over Zoom or, you know, the best ideas come to you when you're in the shower. You know, like you're not always going to be able to be having those conversations.
I tell you what I found super interesting is since I started my company, we've worked with legacy bigger brands.
Hmm.
We've worked with a lot of like newer scale-ups.
Yeah.
They don't care.
That must be interesting.
A lot of them are remote first.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
We've spoken a bit about, I guess, what we would like agencies of the future to look like. But I guess in reality, what do we think from a strategy perspective or just generally the creative industry, what do we think it will look like in 10 years' time?
I think it is going to look different.
Yeah.
And I think change is kind of inevitable. I think, like, in my opinion, might be wrong, over the last sort of like 15, 20 years, we had this era of like battery farmed creativity. Now, what do I mean by that? Like, you've got the big holding groups basically doing efficiency play where you go there as a brand, they do everything for you, TV to digital, blah, 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 and then they distribute it around the world. But increasingly that was about efficiency, giving you like the best deal, the cost.
Yeah.
Good old Martin Sorrell, for example, was often giving away the creativity for free because he'd get the money out of the media. So he'd do a WPP deal back in the day. I think that's changing now. You know, I think we're getting to a point now, hopefully, where a lot of brands aren't seeing the value in that. Mm. Sure, they might use it as a distribution network. Mm. So they'll pump out the ads around the world using that holding company. But you look at the agencies like Mother, Uncommon. You know, I know you had Josh Chen on here from The Calling. You know, these are like little boutique studios that do amazing strategy, amazing creative work. And brands increasingly gravitate towards that, I think. So I think there'll be the rise in independence.
Yeah.
I do think there'll be more different shapes of agencies. So you see already, like, there's the agency that we've got is more about kind of distributed talent. It's like remote first. You see Mischief in America is very similar. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or you have more specialist agencies, so like sports agencies, entertainment agencies as well. So I think it will be more fragmented, more independent-led, kind of a return to the good old days.
Like, back in the day.
Yeah, back in the day. There's a lot wrong with back in the day, but in terms of like the size and shape of agency.
Yeah.
Mm. The final thing I'd say, I'd like to think more diverse in leadership, because I think a lot of women, a lot of people of different backgrounds, you know, they do struggle.
Yeah.
To get to the top. And I think often it breeds an entrepreneurial mindset that leads them to create their own agency. So
fingers crossed.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about, I guess, how it is finding clients being a smaller, more independent. Like, obviously, you've been at those big agencies where a lot of the time clients come knocking on the door or there's a pitch going and you know that that's something that you guys can go for. Mm-hmm. How is it trying? And I know that now big brands are quite intrigued by the more indie shops. Like, what can you do differently in this ever-changing world? But like, how do you go about finding clients to really give you the opportunity to prove that that is a good partnership?
It's a good question. It's not easy. And it's a good
question.
I can
imagine it's hard.
Yeah. I think our biggest new business driver is referral, word of mouth.
Okay.
So in our opinion, you're only as good as the last project you did.
What are some clients that you can mention that you've worked with?
Yeah. So the first client we worked with is was Deliciously Ella.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Love. Yeah.
Which is really embarrassing. It's really embarrassing. I didn't know who she was until we were in the business. And my sister's like, oh my God, it's Delicious. I'm like, who's that? Anyway, so maybe that's why I played it cool when we got the project.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But she, her sort of like marketing director has now moved on to another company who is called Let's Do This. So we're working with them and we've got a campaign coming out in April, May time. Mm-hmm. Very Liquid Death in nature, a bit provocative.
Okay.
So that's a great example. You know, she really liked what we did, brought us in again. But most of our business has been through that. I think our ambitions, in truth, we've done a lot of scale-ups in the last year. And I think now I would love to get some like bigger brands. So that's part of the reason I brought on my new business partner, Fahim. He's going to help me kind of crack that, hopefully. So,
yeah. Open the doors.
What's the biggest challenge you think you'll come up against for your particular agency in the next 10 years?
Don't know. That's great. That.
I just thought that on the spot.
That's a good question. I think staying true to who we are as we grow, it's often the biggest problem that agencies face. They lose sight of like why the company was founded.
The purpose, yeah.
I think that'll be the biggest problem. Or we run out of money.
Yeah.
I think we're fine money wise, but it'll be losing sight of the vision. And not getting ground down as well. Often I've seen it happen to people where they have these big ambitions, they do it for 2 years and they kind of spin out because without going on a tangent, what's interesting about starting your own company, you think starting your own company will address all the things that you used to hate working for a bigger brand or a bigger client, but they come back just in a different...
You've got to deal with them. You're the one that has to
You still get like annoying client feedback.
Yeah.
You've got to do rounds of amends. And you know, I used to think, oh, when I have my own agency, this won't be an issue.
Yeah.
It's so sorry, I meander quite a bit. But I think to answer the question, losing sight of the original vision of the agency, but also just trying to be optimistic. It's a tough path to walk. Don't get ground down, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good question.
No worries. Yeah.
That was a good question.
We wish you the best of luck with it.
Yeah. How long has it been going on for now, Defiant?
Yeah, about a year and 3 months. So we won Ella in about the end of October. And then, yeah, we've been going up to today. So what we now, February 2024, so about a year and a bit, yeah. Wow.
Can you envision you growing quite a lot?
Yeah, I think so. I think I always want to keep it quite small,
yeah,
quite boutique-y. But I think it would be good. It would be good to. I think what I really want are some of those projects with a bigger production budget. So because yeah. we've got these great ideas, and then one of our producers is like, yeah, but your budget for that is a bit small. So I think less about growing the agency right now, and it's more about growing the size of the client that we get, essentially. So.
And what one piece of advice for, I guess, any listeners who are thinking about starting their own agency, what one piece of advice would you give them on their journey?
There's probably better businesses to start. it's quite competitive. No, don't do it.
Yeah,
please don't. I think just be relentless. Just if you don't believe it's going to happen, no one else is. So you just got to be relentless with it. You know, I'll be really honest with you. We won Ella, and then there was a period of like 3 or 4 months where no one was there.
Really?
Nothing came in. And then it got really good. H2 last year, but you've got to be a bit insane in a way. You just got to be so optimistic and like a bit delusional. Mm-hmm. Be delusional if you want.
Be delulu.
Yeah. What would you tell yourself when you first, if you could go back and talk to young Will,
Blackpool Will
on the Pepsi Max ride? Don't get on it. Is that what you'd say? What would you say to yourself, knowing what you know now about the industry back then?
It's a great question. It's a really good question. Well, like a lot of people, made a lot of mistakes along the way. Mm-hmm. A lot of big mistakes. I think, it's such a cliche, but the reason it's a cliche is it's true. Mm. It's such a people business.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter how smart you are or how good at your job you are, unless you can get on with people, whether it be your teammates or your clients, you're not going to get far in this industry. It's a very small industry. Mm. So be nice. Be nice first and be good second, I think. Just be a good person.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah. It's cheesy. Sorry, listeners. But
I think it's a nice kind of way to start to tie the conversation up as well, yeah. I think. I think you've been really honest about things, and I guess, you know, any last questions you have for Will?
Really, I think there'll be listeners out there who will find that really helpful.
Mm. I hope so.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
Didn't speak too fast, though.
No, it was great. But yeah, thank you.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You're more than welcome.